Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. What's it like for journalists to report from inside North Korea, the world's most secretive country? Earlier this year, the Associated Press opened a bureau in the capital, Pyongyang. AP then became the first international news organization with a full-time presence to cover news from North Korea. Gene Lee, the AP's North Korea bureau chief, or North Korea bureau chief, granted a rare interview on that topic with global journalist producer David Cawthon. David was in South Korea's capital, where he also recorded a panel discussion about reporting from inside North Korea, and that panel included Gene Lee. David is in the Global Journalist Studio today to tell us what these media professionals revealed about reporting in the Hermit Kingdom. So, David, why is that reporting job so difficult?
Well, North Korea is a country known for fortressing itself from the world. For example, news about Kim Jong-il's death went unreported for 2 days, and virtually nothing was known about his youngest son and successor, Kim Jong-un. On the rare occasions when the international correspondents are allowed inside, they're placed under severe restrictions and constant watch. Reporters do sometimes infiltrate the country without the government's consent, but they place themselves in great danger. At the East-West Center's International Media Conference in Seoul, four journalists revealed how they report about North Korea from the inside and from the outside looking in. Joining Gene Lee were Mike Chinoy, a senior fellow for the U.S.-China Institute, who traveled inside North Korea 15 times while working for CNN, Christopher Green, the manager for international affairs at the Daily NK in Seoul, and Ju Sang-ha, a North Korea and international affairs reporter for Seoul's Dongha Ilbo. Lee said that she encountered a surprise on her first day on the job in South Korea's capital back in 2008.
When I arrived here in Seoul in 2008, I was told that opening another bureau in Pyongyang would be my main mission. And I remember thinking the day I arrived was the day that Kim Jong-il disappeared. And from that point on, my entire career was consumed by North Korea. And I do remember at the time, it was a very, very tense time from 2008 when we got the first reports that he had suffered a stroke, he had disappeared from public view, there were questions about whether he was alive. It was a very, very difficult time. And 2009, as you know, was very tense as well, the lead up to the rocket launch in April 2009 and the arrest of the two American journalists. So we knew that that was going to be a very, very difficult thing to do. But the time we maintained this goal of opening the bureau, and when the timing was right, which was in 2010, that was when we made our big push to try to open a bureau. Now, I think that, you know, I haven't asked North Korean officials directly, why did you let us do this? I think, and I have made clear to them that we are a global news agency based in the U.S. We do not represent the U.S. government. We are an independent journalism media organization. But they may see things differently. And for them, obviously, the coup of having the world's largest news organization and one that is headquartered in the U.S. can't be missed. I'm sure that's something that they took into account.
Although the AP landed a text and photo bureau in the country earlier this year, the news organization was reporting from the inside before then.
AP has had a presence here since the 1940s, actually, here in the Korean Peninsula, even before the two republics declared themselves separate countries. The first AP correspondent dispatched to Korea was named Roy Roberts. And actually, I just did a Google search, and you can still find some of his stories online, which is very interesting. He covered the period in the late 1940s or in the mid-1940s when the peninsula was divided. So he provides an interesting look at what it was like when the Soviets and the Americans were trying to stake their territory here. Now, we have had a bureau here in Seoul since for decades, but our foray into North Korea dates back to 2006, when our television arm, which at the time was and still is based in Britain, opened up an office in the state TV building, KRT. So we've had a presence in North Korea for 6 years now. And we expanded that with a second bureau that includes a print and photo operation in January. So it's been 6 months. And I consider it very early days. We're still trying to get our operations up and running. It's been a challenge, to say the least. And what we do is we've got two journalists there, a veteran photographer, as well as a young news reporter. And I try to visit the bureau at least once a month, overseeing it from here and on the ground as well in Pyongyang. We've got a photographer, David Gutenfelder, who oversees the operation with me. He is based in Tokyo.
An audience member asked Lee about the restrictions she and her reporters face.
No, our North Koreans can travel fairly freely, although they do tend to travel in pairs. And so make what you will of that, but no, they can travel on their own. They operate, as I said earlier, under separate rules, very different rules than we operate under. Likewise, I'm not always with a minder. I do go out on my own as well from time to time. But I'm just telling you how it is for most foreigners, visitors, journalists. I am given some access and some rights that most journalists aren't, and that's just a matter of having a presence there and having some a different type of relationship. But generally speaking, just to give you a look at what it's like for most journalists working there who do not have resident status, i.e. if you're not Chinese or Russian, it is very difficult.
Lee also described how she gets a quote from a North Korean government official.
We do have a relationship with a foreign ministry spokesman, and if I do want to meet with a certain government official, I arrange for a meeting in advance. Everything in North Korea has to be arranged in advance. This is one of the major challenges. We can barely step out of the hotel unless we arrange it in advance. So, and likewise, meeting with government officials requires arrangement in advance. But to be honest, that's true in a lot of countries. It's hard to get government quotes from South Korea as well. So it's not just North Korea, although it is certainly much more challenging.
When reporters are granted access into North Korea, often the visits are scripted by the government, which is easy to do when reporters are only allowed to see certain areas and speak with certain people. Lee revealed how she bypasses the propaganda.
Is that they do give us journalists visas for very specific time periods. Big events where, you know, if you're there for 3-4 days, it's very easy to orchestrate a journalist's visit to show them the best side of Pyongyang. It's only when you're there in the lulls that you really see you start to get a sense of what it's really like, and you sort of see between the cracks. And I think that people who live there, especially diplomats and people working for NGOs, they've got a different kind of access than we do. They still struggle with access as well. Access has to be negotiated for them as well, but they have far more freedoms than journalists have, foreign journalists and local journalists. So I find them to be immensely valuable as resources and to put things into perspective, especially those who've been there over a period of time. Now, I think it can be inscrutable even for people who live there, and that's another thing to keep in mind. You could be there. I mean, it's happened to me. I'm there, and I'm somewhat out of touch, and things happen in the country that I'm covering that I'm not aware of. But, you know, we cover this country from several different bureaus, so it's not just me. It's a team effort. But likewise, for the people living there, the foreigners living there can be cut off as well, even though they are living in Pyongyang.
As for locals, Lee said easing their nervousness during interviews is a challenge.
If we want to get a quote from locals or people on the street, we do that. I do that without permission. I do stop people and ask them questions.
And do they tell you anything other than what could be lifted almost verbatim from North Korean propaganda?
It's very hard. I do find that when you get people away from cameras, especially TV cameras, they're more willing to speak candidly. They do often speak to me candidly in Korean. Once somebody starts to translate, things change a bit. So it's certainly much easier to speak to them in their own language. Once you start bringing cameras into it or you start bringing translators, it makes people very nervous.
Even with unprecedented access, Lee also described the major obstacles the AP faces when reporting within North Korea.
There is the world that I inhabit when I'm in Pyongyang, which can run on a parallel track to the world that they inhabit in Pyongyang, and that is one of the main challenges that we face. Communications are very difficult. I do have a cell phone, and I am able to call overseas. I can call our bureaus overseas. I can call some of the foreign entities within Pyongyang, but I cannot call my own staff, and this is a major challenge. And likewise, I do have internet access. I have full broadband internet access when I'm in Pyongyang, which is kind of a relief after dealing with the firewalls here and in Beijing. It's nice to get to Pyongyang and have internet access. But our staff does not have internet access. So there are some challenges. These are things that we are addressing and trying to tackle head on. But there are definitely limitations. It's also illegal for foreigners and foreign visitors to travel independently in North Korea. And this is something that we have to deal with. You are required to be with a guide, as they call them, or minder, as other people call them, at all times. And this is the reality of the situation. And it does make for a very challenging reporting experience.
Before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program online. Catch the unedited discussion about North Korea on our website and watch other conversations from the East-West Center's International Media Conference on EWC50.org. Send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at GJJournalist. And David also talked with Mike Chinoy, the former bureau chief in Beijing.
Mike Chinoy has ventured into North Korea on assignment on several occasions, though he says that efforts to open a bureau were never fruitful. Before the panel discussion, I sat down with him and asked if the most recent developments in the country, namely the expanded AP bureau, were signs that North Korea was finally lifting its veil.
There are some intriguing signs that the North Koreans were looking to re-engage internationally. The agreement to allow the AP to open a bureau, I think, was important because they had not allowed anything like that before. In my 14 trips there for CNN, we repeatedly tried to get permission to open a bureau, and they never agreed. And it's an important political decision on their part. It fits with a general sense of them trying to focus more on the economy. And then there was this deal with the U.S. What is hard to explain is, given that they signed the deal, they agreed to the deal, with the Americans explicitly saying a missile test is a deal breaker, why they broke the deal and tested the missile. Whether that was misunderstanding or misreading on their part of how the Americans would react, whether it was internal divisions in the North between the people who were engaging diplomatically and the military, whether it reflects something about Kim Jong-un's own leadership style, we simply don't know. So I think one has to be extremely cautious in reading too much into these signs that suggest, you know, incipient openness and so on. But there are some straws in the wind, even though, as I say, they are countered by this other side, not least of which is the unprecedented bellicose nature of their rhetoric towards South Korea in the last few months, which I think, even by North Korea's own extreme standards, are extremely extreme. When you give coordinates of media organizations that you're going to target If the Iranians did that towards Israel, the Israeli Air Force would be on its way to Tehran. So I don't know how you square these two, because they're both clearly there, and I'm not sure what, you know, how one plays off or relates to the other.
Information from within North Korea is a precious commodity. Christopher Green explained how he and the Daily NK report.
Daily NK obtains news through a number of channels. We obtain news from people in South Korea, defectors and refugees in South Korea. We obtain news from inside North Korea, much like Mr. Ju, through sources inside North Korea that we foster and develop as journalists as best we can. And as Gene alluded to just moments ago, that's not easy either, because North Korean idea of journalism and idea of news is obviously radically different to that we think of in the West. We also meet people in China. We also bring people out of North Korea, and we do much of our work in China. Daily NK has 30 employees, give or take, of which 70% are in Seoul, 10% are in China, and 20%, the remaining 20% are inside North Korea. I don't know who they are. We deliberately divide networks because it's dangerous, of course. Their work is hard, and the North Korean state harasses them, or will harass them if it knows who they are.
Chinoy also told me what most reporters can expect when speaking with North Koreans.
Well, it's hard to get a genuine story in the sense that your encounters with North Koreans are very tightly controlled, either scripted, or North Koreans are taught what to say. And so you stop somebody on the street, if your government minder is willing to ask them a question, you know, you'll get the party line with the effusive praise of the great leader and so on. That being said, it's cut off enough that simply what you see, what you hear, what you pick up, what you feel can give you lots of useful insights. So it's certainly not a lost cause. It just operates in a different way.
Ju Sung-ha, reporter, blogger, and North Korean defector, spoke about one way the government controls what its citizens say to the international media.
제가 평양에 있을 때는 그 외국 평양 시민들한테
The government supplies brochures to Pyongyang citizens that tell them what to do when speaking with foreign media. For example, the brochures say that when you meet the foreign press, you need to use these words and answer this way. This sentiment is instilled in Pyongyang citizens and comprises the premeditated answers that the government requires them to give when speaking with the foreign press.
Work with this. Ju gave some interesting revelations about the citizens of Pyongyang and the countryside. Urban and rural citizens are not equally loyal to the regime.
Last year alone, 150,000 North Koreans entered China, and the vast majority of them were Pyongyang citizens. Those who have seen foreign countries with their own eyes know better than anyone how discreet and behind North Korea is compared to the rest of the world. They also realized more clearly than anyone what kind of visa and obsolete system, three-generation hereditary succession, and the punishment by family accession are. In a sense, the privileges of Pyongyang citizens are acting like a poison for their faith in and loyalty to the regime. The place where government controls are most ineffective is also Pyongyang, while people in the provinces are powerless to stand up against the officers who abuse power to extort wealth. Pyongyang citizens confidently quote various past stipulations of Kim Jong-il as their excuse to defy exploitative orders. In fact, it is much more difficult in general too to make a Pyongyang people listen, because there are many powerful people in Pyongyang. Educational and self-criticism sessions that have been used in the past to brainwash North Koreans are no longer meaningful in Pyongyang. That is because it is becoming increasingly easier for people to bribe their way out of these sessions in Pyongyang. In Pyongyang, officers running these sessions themselves wish that more people would bribe their way out of these sessions. Meanwhile, even as Pyongyang is becoming daily a more difficult city to govern, the countryside is still seeing the brainwashing sessions being regularly attended and people being faithfully mobilized for various exploitative activities. A recent defector from North Korea who also experienced the countryside said that he was surprised to see the past communist practices are being much better followed in the countryside. That is because there was no alternative recourse for people in the countryside than to submit to the pressure of corrupt officers. Provincial officers can get away with trading people brutally and arbitrarily sending them to jail. But these kinds of practices are not imaginable in Pyongyang.
Zhu also speculated about a united Korea and how he thinks this hope should be reflected in reports by the international media.
우리가 그 중동에서 그 야스민 혁명을 통해서 보다시피 무너질
We saw what the revolutions did in the Middle East for dictatorships. I think what happened would have an impact on North Korea or if the country would collapse sometime in the future. But I don't think it would. At least not in a short period of time. We still need to have hope, but relate that with reality. We don't put too much hope into our articles on the subject. We need to show the reality in our stories.
Zhu also mentioned that some in North Korea know the truth, but cannot reveal it.
제가 그 북에 있을 때 보면 북한 주민들도 역시 외부가 어떻게 사는지 많은 사람들이
Of course, those in North Korea who have been abroad know what's going on outside their country. But they can't mention what they know when they return to North Korea.
외국에 나갈 수 있는 사람들은 특권층입니다.
Only the elite have the opportunity to go abroad.
이 사회가 잘못됐다는 걸 누구보다 알지만은
You know what? Those elite people know the exact truth of what's going on inside and outside their country. But they are not willing to talk about what's going on outside because they want to maintain their power. Once they reveal the outside story, they risk losing that power.
Green commented that the information coming from the communist state is a major hurdle for the international media, who must often sift truth from propaganda. His news organization faces other hurdles.
Ever since it began, I think, since news coming out of North Korea began in the 1990s, a lot of the international coverage, present company very much accepted, has been quite amateurish. Sensationalism is prevalent. Hyperbole, not things which tell the story as we think it should be told. So at the end of the 1990s, a group of former leftists in South Korean society, left-wing thinkers, pro-North Korea people, changed their minds in the face of the famine and established an organization called NKNet, which, as time went by, formed another organization called Daily NK, which is where we are today, which was originally established to counter this trend. And where that sensationalism abounds, it's mostly the North Koreans' fault. I mean, it's their aim to be to propagandize. It's their goal to, in some sense, mislead the international community. And Daily NK wanted to counter this trend.
In closing, Green offered this bit of advice to the international media.
If you are, as an international journalist, going to report verbatim the propaganda and or aggressive rhetoric of the North Korean regime, please analyze it as well. Because all you are doing, in my opinion, is frightening people who don't know the country well enough to appreciate what it does or doesn't mean. It's the lack of analysis that I have a problem with. It's not the fact that you choose to report the things that the North Korean regime chooses to say.
At the end of my conversation with Chunoy, I was surprised when he told me that he did have candid talks in North Korea with an unlikely group of people.
The other interesting thing about North Korea is that while those kinds of encounters tend to be very tightly scripted, my own experience has been that in dealings with officials, you can actually have surprisingly candid conversations. That was certainly true in my own experience throughout the 90s and early 2000s going for CNN, that I had higher level access to North Korean officials than I ever had to Chinese officials. Just the way they would, you know, you would go in at the invitation of, you know, one of their organizations and you would get, you know, meals. I mean, I got to be very friendly with a guy who was one of the, you know, the secretary of the ruling party who was related to the Kim family. We went out on, he took us out on Kim Jong-il's yacht fishing one day. We had long discussions about North-South relations and the U.S. and so on. None of it on the sort of on the record, but it's a very tough assignment to live there. But of course, no Western journalists live there, even though the AP has a bureau there. It's staffed by North Koreans who are clearly very highly trusted by the government not to overstep the limits. But there's still an awful lot you can learn there. And if you add to that what you can learn from outside and what you can learn by a kind of informed reading of the North Korean media, you can put together a reasonably solid story, with the caveat that these sort of internal deliberations, it's just guesswork. Educated sometimes, uneducated more often than not.
Today, more about North Korea is reported from the inside. Snapshots of a little girl gazing out into the decaying Pyongyang cityscape, another of a man belting out a karaoke song, or a North Korean table tennis star recalling her time playing with her South Korean teammate. Or better yet, the activist carrying a unified Korean flag as he crosses borders from the north to the south. Are these propaganda or journalism? At the very least, perhaps these stories mark the beginning of unraveling the mysteries of a secretive nation, even if they only give us just a glimpse.
Thank you, David. That was a fascinating, insightful report. Now, so we've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism. Our program is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. And now, stay tuned for Free Press Watch. And join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now, Free Press Watch, a segment on Global Journalist, where each week we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Regina Wang. Today's news comes from the LA Times and the Committee to Protect Journalists. Prominent Ethiopian journalist Eskinder Nega was sentenced to jail for 18 years, the LA Times reported. Ethiopian prosecutors accused Eskinder for participating in a terrorist organization and invoking protests that were similar to the Arab Spring. Ethiopia is known for enforcing a terrorism law to imprison journalists. The law has convicted at least 11 other reporters, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. Eskinder is one of the most outspoken supporters of free press in Ethiopia. He received the PEN International's Freedom to Write Award earlier this year. In 2005, he and his wife, also a prominent journalist, were jailed for reporting on the government's post-election crackdown. His wife gave birth to their son in prison the following year. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week. I'm Regina Wang. See you next week.